There you go. Every time I put one of these on, you know what I think of? Michael Jackson. All I need is a white glove. I will not moonwalk across the stage, I assure you of that. All right? How long you guys been sitting? Too long. Long time? I think I calculated up to about this point. You've set. That's extracting time for breaks, and I assumed everybody would go 45 minutes. I've seen that is not necessarily the case, which is okay. You've been sitting over 5 hours. But you've gotten frequent breaks, and you sat that long in school, right? Most of you? In college, too, probably, right? So, I think we are a little sympathetic. We understand. Can your brains absorb much more? No? Probably not. Well, anyway, you have a little more this afternoon. And I think as you get back and you think about everything you've talked about and or heard, I think you'll find it beneficial. And I think you'll find it's good for you to be here. Everything I've heard thus far has been really good. I hadn't heard them all, but I've only heard part of one, and then I got to hear Coach Merle's, and I thought it was excellent. And it speaks from someone who's lived a while and lived from experience and saw good and bad when it comes to consequences. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever had someone do something to you that was particularly hurtful, particularly embarrassing, maybe painful, something that really got under your skin, something that really hurt you? You ever had that happen? Come on. Yes, all right, I'm hearing yes. What is your immediate reaction to that? What do you really want to do? Get back at them. Teach them a lesson. Wait for an opportunity to seek revenge, right? You ever felt that way? If you are normal, a normal human being, you probably have felt that way. I felt that way. I think that's a normal human reaction that we have. I mean, you want to show them, like, I'll teach them a lesson. You just wait till I get an opportunity to get back at them. I'm going to fix them. You ever felt that way? You guys are either not talking or you're the best group of people I've ever known in my life. I suspect most of us have felt that way. I can't say I felt that way all the time, but I've had occasions in my life. If you live long enough, you're going to feel that way if you haven't thus far. And I bet, or I suspect you probably have. I want to talk about a lesson today from the book of Genesis. Of course, all of our lessons have been centered in our Bible's first book, about an individual who experienced a lot in his life in terms of things that happened to him. Things that happened to him really directly from people who were very close to him in terms of their family, personal relationships. And he experienced a lot of turmoil, and he really got into a situation where he had an opportunity to get back at them. We'll see what he did. Hopefully we'll learn some lessons from this. Who do you think I'm talking about? Joseph. Of course, Joseph. Let's just talk about that story for a minute. I'm Scott Abernathy. I forgot to introduce myself. Hopefully some of you will know who I am. That's not really that important. Story of Joseph. Turn over to Genesis, the 37th chapter. Maybe you can help me a little bit or help. I'm going to try to solicit some input from some of you. What I'd like to do, speak up and answer, one time, wait for another person. I mean, try to do it one time. Not everybody answered the same. Not the same person to answer all the questions. All right, Jacob was whose son? Isaac. That's right. Who was Joseph's son? Jacob. I meant to say who's Joseph's son. I said Jacob. All right. Whoever said that, you're out now. You can't answer anymore. No, that's okay. How many sons did he have? I know some of you know this. 12 sons. From oldest to youngest, where did Joseph land? Next to last. How did his daddy feel about him? showed him favoritism maybe, kind of doted on him, right? How did the other brothers feel about that? They didn't like it at all. They didn't like it a bit. And I'm assuming most of you know this story. I mean, what eventually happened to Joseph? Joseph is sent down one day. His dad says, I want you to go see about your brothers. He had already told them, he'd given a bad report about them. And there's something else in particular that they didn't like about Joseph. Something to do with his dreams. What did his dreams essentially say? Yeah, they're going to be bowing down to him one day. You know, they got the point of those dreams. He had two dreams that the Bible mentions that particularly showed that. Who do you think you are? Basically is what they said. You mean you're going to reign over us? You mean you really think that? This is kind of built up in them. This antagonism that they had for him in combination with some of the other things that they experienced. Well, his dad said, go see about them. They had gone with their shepherds. They had gone as shepherds to shepherd their flock at a distance away. And he sends them down, and he sends Joseph down. And Joseph gets to a certain place. He says he's looking for his brothers. The man says, well, I think they went to Dothan. You didn't know part of the Bible story was in Lower Alabama, did you? No, not that same Dothan. But they went to Dothan. He found them. They saw him coming at a distance. And what did they decide to do at that point? Okay, they decided to kill him. That's exactly right. That was the first plan. They put him down in a pit. What did they do? Well, there was something his dad had given him. A coat of many colors. They pulled off the tunic that he had and put him down in that pit with the intent on killing him. And I think the older brother really had an idea about getting him back to his father. But while he was away, the younger brothers did what? Sold him. It says some Ishmaelite traders were coming through, and it winds up saying that they sold him to some Midianite traders who took him to where? Egypt. Of course, you know this story. And he began to work for a man by the name of, or maybe the title of, Potiphar. And during the course of that working there as a slave, you remember, she made advances toward him, and of course he resisted that, realizing the sin that would be involved in that. And she made up a lie against him, and where did that land him? In prison. Well, things even in prison were okay for Joseph for a while. He interpreted the dreams of who? All right, the baker and the butler. Some versions call it cupbearer. But of course, the baker, of course, lost his head as a result of the actions that Pharaoh took against him. But the butler was restored. And Joseph says, don't forget me. You know, remember me when you get back. I've done nothing to deserve being here. Well, what do? Forgot about him, didn't he? But During the passage of time, Pharaoh also had some dreams. And the butler finally remembered, hey, there was this Hebrew down in the prison with me. He interpreted the dreams of not only me, but the baker. And they came true. And that started a course of action where he was called to appear before Pharaoh. He had to get cleaned up, go up, see Pharaoh. He told him what Pharaoh's dreams meant. Basically said, there's a time of plenty coming. 7 years of plenty, you better get ready because after that, 7 years of nothing, famine is going to come. And you need to put somebody in control, a smart man, someone who is smart in terms of arranging and preparing for this. And they said to themselves, well, who better can we get than this? In whom the Spirit of God, or the Spirit of the gods, as they thought. So Joseph eventually becomes the second in control of all of Egypt. Well, did his brothers have any idea that's what was going to happen? Did they think they had taken care of him? You know, did they sort of seek personal vengeance against him? Wouldn't you say that they did that? This is not just a story about one man not seeking vengeance. It's also about a group of other people who sought vengeance and initially got it. Initially. I mean, I want you to think for a second, and I got ahead of myself, didn't I? I haven't. Sorry. Let's keep going with our story. Eventually, he's reunited with his brothers. The famine hits Canaan. Jacob sends them down to Canaan, and there's several things that happen there. And in a sense, Joseph tests his brothers. He's reunited with his brothers in terms of he finally reveals himself as to who he is. And again, just an incredible story. He's reunited with his father, right? And that family is actually moved down into Egypt, which sets the stage for what happens later on in the Bible, right? With the Exodus. Again, and there's a lot to think about here, not just vengeance, but the way God lays out this plan of bringing Christ into the world. It all hinges really upon all of these events that happen, if you think about that. Now I want to go back for a minute. And I think I was going to ask you to give me the reasons why they hated his brother. Let's go back over that again. Why did they hate him? Father's favorite, the child of his own age, exactly. What else? His dreams, okay, I agree. What else? Say again? Okay, called him many colors. I had one more. He actually reported their actions. He gave a bad report about them. They had reasons in their minds to really hate him and to take care of him. And I suppose once they went and sold him to those traitors, they probably thought they were done with Joseph forever. Right? Wouldn't you think that? You know, that's just before the age of telephones, cell phones. You know, once you got sold as a slave in that culture and in that period of time, you were pretty much gone forever. Of course, he wasn't gone forever, was he? I want you to think a minute about some of the things that Joseph experienced. And I got ahead of myself, but they couldn't even speak peaceably to him. They disputed what those dreams meant. Are you really going to be a ruler over us? You really think you're going to reign over us? And we talked about this a minute ago. They plotted to kill him. They stripped him of his coat, threw him into that pit, sold him to those traitors. And then if that wasn't enough, you think about how Joseph's father felt when they brought that coat back that had been dipped in animal's blood. You know, they didn't have the test that we have today to identify blood. You know, blood is red and it all looks the same. And when he saw that coat dipped in blood, what did he think? My son is dead. He said, I'll go down to my grave grieving for my son. How old was Joseph? The Bible tells us how old he was when he went, I believe, down to Shechem to see his brothers, to follow his brothers. How old was he? 17 years old. It's about the age of many of you. I know there's some a little younger, some a little older. That's about the age. Think about all that he experienced just in that young, early period of time in his life. I mean, I know you don't think you're that young, but compared to 46, it's young. But I doubt any of us have experienced any of that. Here he is, 17 years old, and he's been placed in a situation where, you know, it's just incredible what he had experienced. Now, he came to power and his brothers came to see him, right? Let me ask you a question. Once he had risen in power, well, hold on, I got ahead of myself. I'm back on a chart that I'm ahead of the charts. Let's go back. What are the things that he experienced? He went to Egypt away from his family, sold to Potiphar, refused the advances of Potiphar's wife. He was put in that situation. Then she makes a false accusation to him that winds up him in jail. He interprets the dreams, does a good thing for the butler and the baker. The butler forgets about him. He stays there 2 more years. And you think about, he had to think about his father back up in Canaan, having no idea whether or not he was still alive or dead, wondering what he thought about him being gone all that time. You know, his thoughts had to have gone back to his parent, to his father. Just the emotional pain that he experienced. Do you think anybody would have ever really, of all the people who had ever lived, do you think Joseph might have wanted some revenge? What do you think? Probably so. Would you wanted to get somebody back for treating you that way? I know some of you would. I've seen your Facebook post. Right? Just based on the things I've read on Facebook, I think some of you would want some revenge, right? All right. Well, what might he have done? You tell me. Let's name some of the people he might want to have gotten back. Somebody hadn't answered so far. Potiphar's wife, right? He might want to have got her back because she made up a lie against him. Who else? Okay, the cupbearer, the butler, yeah. You left me there. I told you don't forget about me. I told you I haven't done anything to be here. And what did you do? You went and forgot about me. Who else? That's the obvious one, right? His brother. But that's one. Or 11. Well, no, 10. Ten, right? Benjamin didn't do anything, didn't have a part of this. Right? I had one more you hadn't thought of. Who? God? Well, that ain't who I thought about. You know, it's interesting that you say that. Some people do want to blame God, don't they? We see no indication whatsoever that Joseph ever did that. But I have seen people, I'll tell you a story. I remember back about when I was your age, a family that I didn't really know, but I knew family of the family, because they went to the same congregation as we did. The young man died. They were on the lake one summer afternoon, and he was in a boat very near the boathouse. And back then, and maybe they still do, they had actually lines running down there. And as he is, electric lines running down there, and he was apparently stood up in the boat, if I remember the story right, and he grabbed on to one of those lines, and it electrocuted him and killed him. And I remember it being said, the mother expressed some bitterness against God for allowing that to happen. Why did God let that happen to me? So, you know, some people might actually feel that way sometimes. The only other one I had was Potiphar. You know, Potiphar was responsible for putting him in jail. So, good answers. Well, he could have had his, you know, what could he have done with these people? Remember, he's second in control of all of Egypt, right? We've already mentioned he could seek retribution against the Potiphar, Potiphar's wife, the butler. What do you think he could have done to his brothers now? The tables have been turned. You know, the very people who sought basically to end his life, in a sense, are now here in a whole lot different situation. He could have had them imprisoned. He could have had them tortured, executed. You think of the power that people, that kings, rulers of authority had during this time and age. It isn't like our country where there's a systems of laws to prevent cruelty from happening. I'm going to tell you, in that day and age, the type of power that they had, they could have had somebody's head cut off and not even had it questioned. And I would imagine Joseph retained that kind of power. He could have made servants or slaves of his brothers, right? They basically said, we are your slaves. We'll see in a few minutes. Or he could have just said, you know what, I forgive you, but I'm not having anything to do with you. After the way you've treated me, you know, it's over. We'll never, ever, ever be the same. Did he do that? No, of course he didn't. Turn over to chapter 45. Now, when Joseph revealed who he really was, you remember, they didn't realize who he was. It says that he was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh. If he was 17 when we first really start picking up much about his life, how many years had passed? 13 years had passed. And particularly when you grow from 17 to 30, a lot of people change. A lot of people wouldn't even recognize who you are. People wouldn't recognize me probably from when I was 17. And he probably had changed physically. He was now dressed as an Egyptian. He spoke Egyptian. He spoke to them through an interpreter. They didn't recognize him. But when he finally told them who he was and told them, come closer, see who I really am, look at verse 5. Jeffrey, read verse 5. Don't you think it's kind of odd in a way? Who had the right to be angry? Joseph had a right to be angry. But he's telling them, don't be angry, don't be grieved with yourselves. Because God used these actions, is a sense of what he's saying. God used these actions to preserve life. And there's more time to come. He says, basically, hurry up, go get my father, and tell him what's happened. You're going to live in the land of Goshen. You shall be near me, you and your children. This is verse 10. And your flocks and your herds and all that you have, I will provide for you. I'll take care of you. It's pretty incredible, his reaction, I think. Let's move on a little bit further in the Bible. Look at chapter 50 now. And through the passage of time, by the time we get to chapter 50, who has died at this point? Jacob dies, right? Okay. So, Jacob dies. What's the brothers start to worry about? Say again? Daddy's not around to protect us, or maybe he was just good to us while our father was here. Now what do they think might happen? They think Joseph may get them now. Let's look at what it says. I've lost my place. 15. When Joseph's brothers saw their father was dead, they said, what if Joseph bears a grudge against us and pays us back in full for all the wrong that we did to him? So they sent a message to Joseph and said, hey, your father, charged before he died, say to Joseph, please forgive, I beg you, the transgression of your brothers and their sin, for they did no wrong. For they did you wrong. Now please forgive the transgression of the servants of the God of your father. And then Joseph wept, and he fell down. And they fell down and says, we're your servants. Do you see the consequences we've talked about? I couldn't help but think as I heard these previous two how all these stories kind of intertwine. They sought revenge against him, right? And they got it initially. Now look at the consequences. Look at what they're having to deal with. The concern that, and if it had been a less than honorable man, a person who didn't care about God or didn't care about anybody, he probably would have taken vengeance against them, right? Would he not? Probably would have. But he didn't. And he assures them, don't be afraid, verse 21, I will provide for you and your little ones. So he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. He took care of them. There's a particular verse he says here. Look at verse 19. Trenton, read verse 19. This is chapter 50. Don't be afraid, for am I in God's place, or am I in the place of God? What is he really saying here? Who really has the right to take vengeance? God has that right. Let's look at that principle. God forbids us to take our own vengeance, and I've got some passages I want us to look at. Part of the old law, certainly, and I'm way ahead of myself. Hold on here. Or I'm not ahead, I'm behind. All right? Leviticus, the 19th chapter. Somebody turn over and read that. First person gets it, go ahead, start. Verse 18. Okay, don't take vengeance, don't bear any grudge. Again, this is part of the old law. Proverbs 24, 28, and 29. Someone else. I know some of you have this by now, right? Okay, don't be a witness against your neighbor without cause. Don't deceive with your lips. Don't say, I'm going to do to him as he has done to me. But in the last verse, I believe this is really God speaking, I will render to the man according to his word. Now, it may be that he's saying that as well, so I may be mistaken there. Either way, God is saying, don't take your own personal vengeance. We'll keep going here. We'll see that really this belongs to God. This idea of taking vengeance is something that's reserved for God. Joseph, we've already said that. He says, am I in the place of God? We've already read Genesis 50 and verse 19. How about Psalms 94 and verse 1? And while you're doing that, somebody go to Romans 12th chapter. And read verses 2 and 3 as well. Okay, this is an appeal to God for someone who is seeking justice. And that's what he's saying. God of vengeance, shine forth. Judge of the earth. Render recompense to the proud. God will take care of that. How about Romans, the 12th chapter? Vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Back up and get verse 17 as well. Okay, don't repay back evil for evil. And that's hard to do. And I think God recognizes that's hard for us to do sometimes. That's why He has to remind us that this is my area. This is something I'm going to do. Let's keep going here. And I struggled a little bit. I had some thoughts I just wanted to throw in here that I thought would be good to think about. I think sometimes in terms of our relationships with one another, fellow Christians with one another, you know, there are things that sometimes we do that are wrong, and those have to be corrected. I'm afraid we sometimes get into the attitude of either we don't want to point that out without someone, or really the idea is sometimes we get into a mode of when we do see someone doing wrong, we have to be careful that we don't have those feelings of, well, I'm going to show him, you know, he did wrong, or I'm going to get him back. I think that attitude can sneak in here if we're not careful. And we're not going to read those passages for the sake of time, but these are passages that deal with dealing with a sinning brother. We have a responsibility to do that. Don't let the idea of, I don't want to get revenge against him, keep us from doing that, but at the same time, when we do that, make sure that we do it with the right attitude. We don't want to do it with the attitude of, I caught you, I'm going to get you. And I'm afraid we can fall into that real easily. I could see myself falling into that if I'm not careful. Now, what are some areas of life, or what are some different ways someone might seek to get revenge? Okay, I've got gossip, exactly. Let's say someone does something against you that you don't like, and maybe it's a friendship, maybe it's a romantic relationship, maybe it's a work relationship, school relationship, whatever. And as a result of that, maybe there's some hard feelings, there's some things that said, maybe there's something wrong that's done to you. You feel like it's been done to you, and you go, well, you ought to know what he did. You won't believe what he did. You won't believe what she did. See, in our tongues, through gossip, saying things that don't even need to be said, maybe even if they are true, if they're done for hurtful purposes, and I've seen people, as a result of that, fall into that trap and say things that really don't need to be said. Again, it's a human, it's part of our nature, I'm afraid. Well, I don't want to put it that way. It's something we have to struggle with, put it that way. There are things that we struggle with, and the use of the tongue and gossip, I think, is one that we have to deal with, and God addresses it and wants us to address it. What about physical force? Fist fight. And guys in particular sometimes struggle with that. They'll be in a situation and, you know, first thing is I'm going to punch him out. And not everybody's that way, but there are people who utilize that as a way of retribution. Maybe hurtful pranks. And I'm not talking about good-natured pranks where you play a joke on somebody and everybody laughs. I'm not talking about that. I think that those kind of things, I think, within a realm of reason can be okay. But I'm talking about things that are very hurtful, things that embarrass. And if you've been the recipient of that, there are people's feelings that get pretty hurt sometimes. And we need to be careful about those kind of things. We talked about use of the tongue, spreading gossip. Here's what I want you to think about, and this can come up in almost any relationship. The list I mentioned a minute ago. Even husbands and wives, if they're not careful, one does something that the other doesn't like. Maybe it's spend some money that one doesn't like. Well, I'll show him I'm going to go out and buy. I'll show her I'm going to go out and buy me something. And I know most of you aren't close to... maybe some of you are already married, right? I see a couple back there. Some of you are not too far away, okay? Some of you have a few years yet. But your personal relationship with your husband and wife, I mean, because you are there and because you are together all the time, or most of the time, if we're not careful, sometimes those kind of things can happen. One does something, well, the other one's going to react. Maybe in your school relationships. And this is a trivial example, but, you know, just someone, maybe somebody didn't speak to me. Well, I'm going to show them. I'm not going to speak to them for a while. Now, that sounds trivial, but people's feelings can get hurt and friendships can be harmed. And it might just be they didn't see you. Might just be they had something on their mind. So, let's don't seek out retribution that way. I have known people, in fact, I've heard grown adults, you know, that person stuck up, he didn't say anything to me, he just walked right by me, didn't say a word. And it could be that that person had something terrible weighing on their mind. And that they didn't think, or they didn't see you. Give them the benefit of the doubt. And I realize, or maybe it's something, maybe there's a group of friends and someone gets excluded, and well, I'll show them, they didn't invite me, I'm not going to invite them. Again, that may sound petty, but I know those are things that you deal with. Try not to utilize or try not to act out vengeance as a result of that. There is a character in the Bible that I'm thinking of that I don't have on my charts that planned to get revenge on somebody. I'll give you a hint. It's in the book of Esther. Haman? Yeah, why did Haman not like Mordecai the Jew? Wouldn't bow down to him. And he decided he was going to fix him. What did he have made? He had this gallows made. What's a gallows? Something you hang somebody on. 50 cubits high. I think that'd be 75 feet high, right? 18 inches high. 75 feet high. Well, what wound up to Haman? The very gallows that he made for Mordecai the Jew were used for his own hanging. And you never know when you go and seek vengeance on someone, how it's going to turn out. Those brothers of Joseph had no clue that when they were doing this against Joseph, they had no clue 13 years later, they were going to be standing in front of him, bowing down to him, basically begging for their lives after Jacob died. It may have been a few more years after that, more than 13, but you get the point. I've heard it said that when you go to seek revenge, you dig two graves. One for the person that you're getting revenge on, and who's the other one for? Yourself. And I think, in many ways, that might sometimes happen. We never really know how life's going to turn. You know, you may think, well, this is what I want to do. This is going to give me justice. And it may not turn out the way you think that it will. And even if it did, God says, leave that to me. You know, I don't begin to be able to tell you that I understand everything, every reason behind every law that we have. Sometimes God just asks us to trust Him and to have faith in Him that He'll take care of things as He sees fit. And that's one of those situations that we have to do that. You know, it may be hard. It may be hard to resist. But God said, do it. Leave it to me. A couple of good examples I thought of who refused to take revenge. Who was trying to kill David? Saul had on many occasions trying to kill David. He was very jealous of him. He could see what was happening in terms of popularity and the fact that God was with David. And he sought to have David killed. David, in the course of running from him, had opportunities, multiple opportunities, I believe, to kill Saul. Did he? And what did he do when he heard the news of Saul's death? He mourned. The very man who was trying to kill him, he cried and wept when he heard that he had died. That's indicative of one who really loves. And of course, who is the ultimate example of one who had all the power you can imagine to have vengeance in terms of how he was treated on this earth? Jesus, of course. What did it say? What does it say? He could have called what? 12 legions of angels? The song says 10,000 angels. I think I heard somebody say 10,000. I think the writer of that song used some poetic license to equate 10,000 with 12 legions. 12 legions wouldn't exactly add up to 10,000, but I think within the scope, I mean, we know that he could have called 10,000 angels, couldn't he? Did he? No. I mean, he was hung up on a cross, nailed to it, laid up there to suffer on it for all those hours that day. And he did it willingly. Right? And he had the power of deity. He could have called 12 legions or 10,000 angels, but he refused. I want to leave you with one passage. 1 Corinthians, the 13th chapter. If I had to ask you one word . What's the one-word description of this chapter, for the most part? It's about what? Love. Okay, there is another aspect taught here that's important. But there's a particular thing said about love that I think that is relevant to our discussion on seeking vengeance or seeking revenge. Look at verse 5. Well, really, everything we've talked about, and not just verse 5, but verse 4. Love is patient, it's kind. It's not jealous. Joseph's brothers exhibited jealousy, didn't he? Doesn't brag, isn't arrogant, doesn't act becomingly, doesn't seek its own, isn't provoked. And look at what it says at the end of verse 5. Does not take into account a wrong suffered. Now, sometimes I'm afraid in our dealings with one another, someone does something that we don't like, hurts us. What's our reaction? We're going to remember that. We're going to remember it. We may say we forget it, but we're going to remember it, and if we're not careful, we're going to use it back as justification to act wrong towards the person that did something wrong to us. All right? And the Bible says true love doesn't act that way. I think God knows that we are subject to things in terms of our frailties. I mean, He knows that we are subject. I mean, we are people. We make mistakes. And He tells us about these things so we can work on them. And He gives us the blood of Christ to take care of those sins when we do commit them. So if you have things you have to work on, don't quit. Keep working on them. Keep working on them. Any questions? That's the last thing I have. Oscar? Okay, excellent. That's an excellent. I don't know if you heard all that. What was the passage again? 2 Timothy, the 4th chapter. You remember Paul is talking about a particular individual, Alexander the coppersmith, who did him a great deal of harm. And who does he say will repay him back? Yeah, God will repay him back. Paul didn't say, I'm going to get him. No, leave that to God. Good point. Excellent. Anything else? Thank you for your good attention and your comments and for participating. We're going to have a couple of announcements.